We are recording.
Good morning. It is 8:35 and we're going to call this meeting to order. Please note that we have Assistant Attorney General Mark Harris present to assist the board. Please make sure that you have muted or turned off all electronic devices. The Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public as well as the welfare of animals by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. All right, so we'll go ahead and do a roll call. Mr. Logan, would you mind?
Dr. Byrne is absent. Ms. Krieger, absent. Ms. Frost? Dr. James?
Here.
Mr. Logan here. Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
And Dr. Wright is absent. We have a call.
All right, so we will go ahead and start with the informal interviews. The first one on the list is 2392, and Dr. Nosley, you are the lead.
Would you like me to read the front log?
Yes, please.
Case 2392, complainant is Kevin Wright and Reagan Cohen. Respondent is Amanda Melhouse, CDM. On January 26, 2023, Indy, an 8.5-month-old female Labrador, was presented to respondent for a spay procedure. During the procedure, the dog went into cardiac arrest. Resuscitation efforts were unsuccessful and the dog passed away. Complaints expressed concerns that the dog was over-medicated, specifically with respect to the buprenorphine administered during the procedure. There were also concerns with respondent's ability to perform a spay procedure and with the equipment used during the procedure. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
All right, so Dr. Nosley, you want to?
You have to hear from the respondent.
We have, yes, we have the complainant and the respondent present.
Respondent first.
So respondent will go first, and I got, Anderson, looks like counsel's here too, so yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for coming today. For the purpose of the record, would you please state your name?
Leanne Hay on behalf of Dr. Melhouse.
And Dr. Amanda Melhouse.
Great, thank you. So we'll give you 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. As Tracy explained, this is a sad case involving the death of Indy, a female yellow Labrador retriever who was about 8 months old. She was an established patient with Stonecrest and had been multiple times for pneumonia, a cough, standard vaccinations, and so on. Her owners brought her to Stonecrest on January 26th for a spay procedure with Dr. Melhouse. The pre-op exam revealed a weight of 60 pounds, temperature of 100, respiratory rate of 30, heart rate 120, cap refill time of 1 second, and body condition score of 6.5. It was also noted that the history of bronchitis and pneumonia had resolved. Dr. Melhouse gave pre-medication of dextromidor, butorphanol, and carprofen. For induction, propofol was given, and once good sedation was reached, the procedure began. Perioperatively, Dr. Melhouse gave buprenorphine 0.3 mg per mil. Indy's vitals were normal until about 9:05 when she went into cardiac arrest. Significant resuscitation efforts commenced and the owners were called who requested that CPR be continued, which it was. Unfortunately, there was still no response and so they stopped CPR several minutes later. I called the owners again to explain the situation, offered to pay for a necropsy, which the owners agreed to. Indy's body was sent to Midwestern Pathology, and the pathologist didn't identify any issues or cause of death other than expected injuries from the CPR. And the pathologist did note that anesthetic-related deaths are frequently difficult to identify a cause of cardiovascular collapse and are frequently frustrating. At the owner's request, Indy was cremated. The main issues that have been identified throughout the board process is primarily the documentation of buprenorphine. The buprenorphine is documented in two different places in the records, in the written anesthesia log as well as the typed electronic record. The typed record indicates that 0.3 of buprenorphine was given preoperatively. The preoperatively note was a typo, it should have said perioperatively. There is a separate place right above that in the record that actually talks about pre-medication, which does not list buprenorphine, and then right below that is the induction medications, and then below that is buprenorphine, which is evidence that it was given perioperatively, so it's just a typo that it was preoperatively. And then there's also been an issue that in the written anesthesia record, it shows that it was given perioperatively, but it lists 0.6 mg per mil instead of 0.3. That is just part of the anesthesia form as it comes, and so Dr. Milhouse normally crosses out the 0.3, or the 0.6 rather, and would write 0.3. She was just using up the last of the 0.3 vials that were on hand from the previous veterinarian that works in the practice. We did explain in our written responses that even if 0.6 had been given, which we don't believe that it was, that it wouldn't have caused this reaction or Indy's death, and that it would have showed differently. Dr. Melhus did talk to poison control about this, and we've submitted that to you as well. Dr. Melhus is also very detailed in her record keeping, and due to the unusual circumstances in this case, she strayed from her normal practice, but her normal routine is to put all of the records from the day, the typed record, anesthesia records, vaccination records, all of them into a basket to review either that night or the next morning to make sure that everything is accurate. And she departed from that routine here because she wanted to type everything down as quickly as possible, and still, frankly, had some adrenaline flowing from the resuscitation efforts. And so, unfortunately, those two typos were just missed. Briefly, there was also an issue about the necropsy photos being sent to the owners. We also addressed this in both our original response and our recent supplemental response, but again, Dr. Melhus was not the one that sent the necropsy photos. She wasn't on that email chain, and she didn't know that necropsy photos are included in Midwestern pathology reports, and she hadn't worked with them before. No other issues, I think, remain at this point, so it is certainly unfortunate that Indy died, and we both sympathize with the owners for not getting closure about the cause of that death, but it does appear that it was a random anesthetic-related death, not caused by anything that Dr. Melhus did. So we are asking that the board uphold the recommendation of the committee and dismiss the case. We are also asking the board not to issue a letter of concern for documentation, as this was just an error that occurred because of the unusual circumstances. Her normal practice to be very careful in her charting, and this documentation error also did not cause any harm to the patient. And so again, we are asking for dismissal. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have the complaint in here as well. So you guys can go ahead and step back. Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for being here today. For the purpose of the record, would you please state your name?
Yeah, it is Kevin Wright, WRGHD.
So we will have 5 minutes for you to address the board.
Okay. I'll do my best.
Great.
Glad I got to go after. Strayed from normal practice, random anesthetic death is what I just heard. I requested a meeting with Reagan, my partner, the day after this, because the day that, the 16th, the date that Andy passed during the spay, we were asked to come into the clinic and talk about what happened, and it was in the initial intake room with the table with my dog lying in front of me, and they wanted to have a conversation about what went wrong with my dog that was very alive and healthy 6 hours prior. I was not very focused during that meeting, so we asked for a meeting the subsequent day. They wanted to have the meeting again in the same room, obviously without the dog there, but we asked for the meeting in her office, which was uncommon practice, I think. Dr. Melhouse did make accommodation along with her office manager who was present. Reagan, my partner, she does investigation work for a company, and she's very good at taking notes. We did not record the meeting, but we took very good notes. She informed Dr. Melhouse that she was going to be taking notes, and the laptop was up, and that's how the meeting proceeded. We asked several questions. During that meeting, it came up that Dr. Melhouse said, "I am slower at spades. I don't do them that often." So that was a discovery. I was concerned about the meds and the opioid that was given to her. I'm not going to pronounce it correctly, buprenorphine, I guess. And that was only the day after. I hadn't received any records at this point. And she said that everything was going well until it wasn't, quote unquote. I was pleased with how she took to all the preoperative meds and pleased with how she took the anesthesia. I gave Indy an opioid midway through the surgery, because after one of the ovaries was removed, because she didn't want her to be in pain. It's possible that, was it possible that there was an allergic reaction? Dr. Melhouse said it is possible there was an allergic reaction that was, but I'm not sure. I asked, how soon did you notice she was going into cardiac arrest after the opioid was given? She said, quote unquote, shortly after. I also asked if it was standard practice to give that drug, I'm not a medical person, mind you, during a procedure. She said it's standard practice. And then she said it could have set in slowly, the effects of the opioid. I found out later through talking through friends of mine who have adult children who are in the vet world that said that it's standard practice for a respiratory monitoring report of some sort. I requested that from Adrian Coronado with NVA. I didn't realize until this whole thing happened that this was not a privately owned clinic. This was obviously owned by NVA, who I know a lot about now. And she did forward that report, which Dr. Melhouse did not. Dr. Melhouse forwarded the typed version, which we got. And I understand that all these things, not standard practice, discrepancies. All I'm hearing about, by the way, is discrepancies. This report that was taken, that was handwritten the day of the procedure, clearly states that intubation started at 8:03, anesthesia started at 8:04, surgery started at 8:20. It is handwritten in here that the opioid, buprenorphine, forgive me, 0.6 milligrams, and the dosage of 2.7 was given, and it is handwritten at 8:30. She told us during that interview that it was given during the surgery, interoperative, whatever, preoperative, I don't know. And then it shows up here as preoperative, not during the procedure. So I'm not making this stuff up. I mean, there's a huge discrepancy. I can understand maybe, okay, some discrepancy, but there's a lot of discrepancies here. Why would they handwrite it happened at 8:30? And then you look at the monitoring report, again, I'm not a medical person. At 8:25, her heart rate was 53. At 8:35, which by the way, the five has been, someone altered that. If you look at it, you'll see that. But at 8:35, it went from 53 to 82, and then to 99, 99, 99, 99, all the way through 8:55 when they started chest compressions. It's a lot of discrepancies, especially for a doctor who's apparently very good at details and notes. But this day, everything strayed from the normal standard procedures, and oh, I made a mistake on the typo, I made a mistake on this. That's not what the handwritten report says. Everything else shows that she was given the drug at 8:30, and the dosage was double the legal limit for that dog, because it was obviously 0.6, not 0.3. And then she had a heart attack. Like to say thank you. And yes, they did send the direct autopsy report with all the photos, not Dr. Melhouse, but NBA did that. We had the pleasure of opening that document.
Sorry to hear about that. Yeah. Sorry for your loss.
Thank you. Yes.
All right, so Dr. Melhouse, do you have anything you would like to say?
No.
Oh, we don't do that.
No.
Oh, never mind. Sorry. All right. So now it's to you.
Okay.
Thank you. In this case of a very sudden anesthetic death, we did have a necropsy and it was no help in determining a pre-existing condition that could be a factor. In the discussion today and in the investigative committee, most of it surrounded this administration of the opioid. And for me, while there were discrepancies in the record, I do not believe they contributed to the outcome of the case. So from that standpoint, I'm satisfied with the record, and I'm satisfied with the interviews in determining that as far as that particular part of this case, everything was minor and not contributing to the death of the animal. That being said, one thing that has not been discussed at any great length is the anesthetic record. And if you look at the timeline and at the record itself, I believe there are serious questions regarding that anesthetic record. And we can talk about some of the things I see here, but for that reason, I'm going to make a motion that we move this to informal so that the complainant can hear and the respondent can respond. We may find it not to be contributing to the death of the animal, but I have questions, and if other members of the board do, I would make a motion to move this to informal.
Second.
All right, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We'll move case 2392 to informal. All right. So the next case we'll take is 23150. And for that, we have, is the complainant and Mr. Sol, are you monitoring?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So we can go ahead. Tracy, will you read the front load?
Sure. Case 23150, the complainant is Sierra Ramos. The respondent is Daniel Lorenzi, DVM. On May 30th, 2023, thanks. A 1.5-year-old neutered male domestic Schrodinger cat was presented to respondent on emergency due to the inability to urinate, abnormal breathing, and not walking. Complainant approved the critical assessment panel and associated fees. Respondent evaluated the cat. He was in critical condition with an obstructed bladder. Pain medication was administered. The cat was de-obstructed and blood work revealed hypokalemia and severe azotemia. Respondent discussed his findings with complainant, advising her of the cat's critical status and the need for further hospitalization and treatment. He further explained that the cat's hypokalemia could result in immediate cardiac arrest. A treatment plan was provided to complainant, and euthanasia was also discussed as a humane option. Complainant declined further services due to financial constraints and elected to take the cat home. While preparing for discharge, the cat arrested and CPR was initiated. Complainant was updated on what had transpired and the CPR efforts. Respondent relayed that CPR statistics were an additional cost that may be incurred for continued efforts. Complainant requested continuing CPR for 10 minutes. CPR was unsuccessful and the cat passed away. Respondent attempted to consult with complainant that she was too emotionally distraught. Complainant expressed concerns that with the requirement to pay fees upfront for services. In this case did not go in front of the investigative committee. It came to you directly for your review and consideration.
Great, thank you. So Ms. Ramos, would you like to address the board? You can come forward. Sit in either of those two chairs. So thank you for being here today. For the purpose of the record, would you please state your name?
Sierra Ramos.
Great. We'll go ahead and give you 5 minutes to address the board.
First, I'd like to say good morning, everyone, and thank you for your time. I'm here because I firmly believe that my experience with this veterinarian was neglectful and maybe even life-motivating.
I'm sorry, I'm going to need to ask you to speak up.
I firmly believe that my experience with this veterinarian was neglectful and maybe even money-motivated. Upon my arrival to the clinic on May 30th, I was checked in and they took things right away. I waited in the lobby for what I approximate to be about 30 to 40 minutes before getting called into an exam room. At this point, I already paid a $850, I emphasize, critical fee is what they called it and advertised it as. In those 30 to 40 minutes, all that was accomplished was a blood test and 2 pain injections. The veterinarian diagnosed Binks with a urinary block as well as alerted me of Binks' high potassium levels. The veterinarian explained a brief treatment plan and asked if I had any questions. I asked one question, I believe, which was if they started unblocking Binks or if they had already inserted a urinary catheter. The veterinarian responded with a no. I communicated that I could not give them an answer on my treatment plan because I had to consult with my mother before agreeing to anything. The veterinarian said he would be back in about 5 minutes. About 30 to 40 minutes later passed before anyone came into the room to talk to me. It was the technician where she sat in, gave me the veterinarian's treatment plan, but I told them I would like to take my cat elsewhere. By then, too much time was already wasted. The amount of time they were taking from me caught up. By the time I was gonna get discharged, Binks' heart stopped. They requested an additional $850 to continue CPR. Veterinarian estimated that it would only reach up to $600. I'm young and I was alone. My mom didn't really have a way of paying for our house and they kept pushing me for money. Every second counted and Binks did not receive the critical care and compassion he deserved. Rather, the veterinarian wasted Binks' time. Once he was dead, they no longer pushed me for the money I owed. They patiently waited for somebody to pick me up to collect the money. My Binks lay dead in the treatment area for what I believe to be 15 to 20 minutes before a whole separate technician came in offering his condolences and my cat. Nobody else thought to offer me my cat after he passed. I do not believe the veterinarian was influenced by the welfare of the patient nor the needs of the client. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have one question because it wasn't clear in the record. How old was this cat? Was it 7? I got 3 different things. 7.5 months, 1.5 years, and 7.5 years. It's 3 different places. It says 3 different things.
He was 1.5.
1.5 years old.
The form they asked me to fill out there was online and it was a typo. I just put the wrong year. So they mark it as 7.5 months.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so we do not have the respondent in this case, and Mr. Soul's monitoring. Respondently is Ms. Frost.
Yes. First of all, I'm very sorry for your loss. This condition is a true critical emergency, especially given what his blood work looks like. Just in my experience, the veterinarians can more appropriately interpret it. However, in my experience, the fact he wasn't presented in cardiac arrest is pretty incredible. And everything that was done medically appears very appropriate from the critical assessment to the steps that were taken. And I just wanna make sure that Ms. Ramos knows that the medical record does state that urine was removed from Binks's bladder prior to the formal unblocking. However, to me, it all comes down to communication, which is not uncommon, especially in a situation as critical as Banks appeared to have been in. And having time to digest information and have the time to make the decisions medically and financially is overwhelming and takes a lot of compassion, and even then can miss the mark, which appears to be the case here. But I don't see anything that falls below our standards, so I'm gonna make a motion to dismiss with no violation, just so we can open it up for discussion.
Second.
All right. So we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on this case?
I've got a question for the veterinarians on the board about this blood work. Any estimation of how much time would have to pass for it to get this bad? For some of these things to be so high that it couldn't read it? Or so low that it couldn't read it?
Yeah, that is a good question. And we don't know exactly, however, it's estimated that somewhere around 24 to 48 hours of being completely obstructed, your values will get extremely high,
okay.
which is what happened here. Could have been even longer than that, but I would say 24 to 48 hours you might get these values.
It is challenging when cats use litter boxes, right? And oftentimes it's not a single cat household, and so you can't, it's not the same as like if you were to walk your dog outside and watch them, right? Cats, you don't accompany to the litter box, and so they can start struggling with urination. You don't even necessarily know it. Some are so stoic, they don't even make a peep about it. Some of them, as soon as they have a little UTI, start howling. So if he was a really stoic kitty, you can go for a while.
Yeah, I agree.
At least from all the experience I have talking to owners.
I didn't mean to imply that the cat was ignored. Because
I agree with what you're saying completely. No, not at all. That's the thing, is that cats are formerly so stoic that, unfortunately, a lot of times in emergency, when you see a kitty, they are so critical, right? Versus a dog might have a little head tilt and they come right in. It's just the nature of how they express pain, and veterinarians struggle with this often, I think, with pain management and how to, even something simple as osteoarthritis in a cat, it's harder to demonstrate and educate because they don't look painful, not in the traditional manner of what you attribute to a pain.
I've had cats that came in with no history of litter box problems, and you feel their bladder and they're obstructed. And so it isn't a matter of just ignoring the symptoms.
And I think you brought up a good point, because I know that was a concern at some point in the complaint. You can diagnose a blocked cat without an ultrasound.
Yes. Oh, so, absolutely.
The bladder is very large, it's firm, and even when you express it, no urine will come out because the outlet is blocked. So advanced diagnostics are not necessary to diagnose that condition.
Yeah, again, it is one of the very true, really critical. And it's interesting because, again, they can present looking fairly normal, but, he seemed to be straining, right? And we're immediately putting an ECG, leads on those feline patients, because we want to know, what does that look like? Are we about to tip over the edge? Even before blood work or anything's approved, we'll use that as initial triage. And maybe forget to even have that discussion with the client, because to us, it you have to move really, really quick.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, sometimes how quick you have to move misses the mark on communication and compassion in the way that you would prefer it to happen. And that is the part that I think is the really, really, really tragic part here, is that you have a really caring owner who loved Binks very much, who did everything that they could have possibly done with a team that sounds like medically, they did everything they possibly could do, and it was an awful outcome.
Yeah, I think the communication in this one played a key piece of why we're here. And it is tough in these situations when you're moving so fast and you're trying to get things moving along. And finances always come into play. I imagine you deal with it more in the emergency setting than we do, but I mean, I think that that was a big piece of what caused this.
And probably the fast piece too is deceiving, because a critical doesn't mean that everything will happen in minutes, like in 2 minutes or 3 minutes. It may be 30, 40 minutes, an hour, but it's not for lack of moving as quickly as possible. And that's super important to understand too, is it's not it's not always super rapid. Same thing, human emergency room experiences are not always the most rapid, but they have to be intentional. So it just, the whole thing, it just broke my heart, because I guess I've seen so many of those, and you just wish you could, you know, express more, you know, to a pet owner who did everything they could.
All right, so we have a motion, we have a second. And any other comments before we vote? No? All right, so all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right, motion passes. And the next case we're going to take is 23148. And 23148 has no complainant, but just to the respondent, just the respondent. So Tracy, would you read us the front load?
Sure. This case 23148, the complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board, and the respondent is Heather Oyen, UVM. May 17th, 2023, the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board voted to open investigation after reviewing premises inspections conducted at Dream Drop Cat Hospital. This did not go in front of the investigative committee. It was brought straight to you for your review and consideration.
All right, so I don't have a say.
Right here.
Thank you. Would you like to come forward and address the board? Thank you for being here. For the purpose of the record, would you please state your name?
Heather Oyen.
Thank you, and you have 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. I appreciate the time and opportunity to speak with you all on my behalf regarding potential violations recently found at a premise inspection at my veterinary hospital. As detailed and documented in my recent written response to your inquiry, I have worked diligently to resolve these potential violations and set procedures and safeguards in place to prevent future recurrence. There have been several obstacles of various kinds over the last few years that have needed navigating. And I have, throughout this time, with increased need and demand for patient care and in addition to lack of employee availability, kept patient care a top priority at my hospital. I have invested much time, effort, and resources into rebuilding a great long-term team, training, and persistence, and my effort has been rewarded, although it is still a work in progress. I just want to let you know I'm working really hard to keep up on everything, and lack of staffing has really been an issue at my hospital, and it is much improved. I've got two full-time and one more that's looking to join our team that looks very promising. I have just been overwhelmed with patient demand and needs, things that I need to do paperwork-wise, I have not kept up on as well as I should. Although I feel like my records, even though, you know, the record that the inspectors looked at, that she looked at when she was there, unfortunately weren't completely written up. Even though I might not at the time of the exam or that exact day write everything up, including diagnostic findings and treatment, there's a physical exam note in all my records. All my findings are written in that. So if I don't get it done that day, I try real hard by the end of the week to get everything written up, but everything is written in the exam record. So just want to let you know I'm committed to do whatever needs to be done to continue to provide quality patient care. Thank you.
Thank you. So you can stay there if you'd like. We don't have anyone else. Dr. Lohe, you're the lead on this case.
Okay, so this case was brought before the board as repeated and uncorrected violations that's documented in three premise inspections, each of them finding potential violations. So I guess I'm going to make a motion to offer a consent agreement. And Madam Chair, I would move to find the findings of fact documented in the investigative division report and the memo dated May 8th, 2023 as our findings of fact. And, yeah.
Second.
We have a motion to accept the findings of fact and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And Madam Chair, I move to find the following violations based on the findings of fact as our conclusions of law. Violation of ARS 322233A1, unprofessional or dishonorable conduct, making false reports and rewriting on three occasions to the board and staff stating that potential violations documented in premise inspections had been remedied. ARS 322274A2, failure to maintain clean and sanitary facilities for the performance of services in accordance with the rules adopted by the board as related to R311703-1, 2, and 4. This is going to take a while, Mr. Harris, if I have to read the whole thing. I just read the number, or I need to state the whole thing?
You can just read the numbers.
Read the numbers, okay. The next one is ARS 322274A3, which is a violation of section 322233. ARS 322274A4, as related to R311802A, 802C, and as related to R311502K2 and R311502K3, ARS 322274A5 as related to R311802A, 802C, R311502I, R311502J2 and R311502D, ARS 322274A6 as related to R311502H3, R311502L4, 5, 6, and 7. Is related to, and also A, B, C, D, of that L7, is related to R311502H5, A, B, C, D, E, as related to R311801A, 1, 2, and 3, is related to R311104. That is my
For clarity, is that all the findings consistent with what was in the premise inspections? It wasn't following directly, so I just want to figure out where exactly those were coming from.
They're all from the
premise inspection.
Repeat premise inspection. Okay.
You need a second?
Yes.
Second.
So we have a motion for the violations found on the repeat premise inspection and a second. Do we have any conversation questions?
Yes, just a couple of points that I'd like to emphasize. Dr. Oyan previously declined to sign a CA that was offered. that the inspector indicated this was in the top five most concerning premises that she had ever seen. So I certainly hope Dr. Ouyang will consider sending.
At this recent inspection?
No, the previous one.
Previous.
Which inspection was, I'm sorry, I'm just confused.
In 2021, the board, I thought I referenced the timeframe. But most of these are repeat, so it's not like it's new.
Yeah, I definitely feel like we have repeat issues that have been repeated multiple times. I mean, we're hearing now that there are things that have changed and policies that have changed and put into place. But I don't know how much, you know, after the third inspection, you guys want that to weigh in. We've historically allotted to weigh in a little bit if actions were being taken. And I do understand that actions are being taken, but I also understand that this is the third inspection with multiple of the same issues.
So I would argue that there is no way for us to know that actions have been taken because they have not. They said they were taken in the past, and they were obviously not. And we've actually got pictures of an expired thing on the shelf with the same label, and then a year later, the exact same vial, when they said, oh, yeah, we got rid of all that, and we cleaned it all up. Well, that's at least one instance where you know you got a picture.
And I think just like any of these cases, you know, you hear the testimony, you see what's been written, and you have to decide if you think it's happening or not. So I believe that there's been some action taken based off of what was submitted, but you're right. Do we know it's in place? I'm going off of testimony.
Yeah. In the controlled substance issues, extremely serious.
Yes, and I think it should be reported to DEA if it has not already been.
And I honestly don't know if I should be replying back to this at this point or not.
No, so, okay. We're just in discussion.
Okay.
Thank you. Anything else before we vote? All right, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Roll call for this one. Violations.
Yep. Go ahead.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Lopez, an aye. Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
The ayes have it. We have a 6-0.
And this is being done as a consent agreement?
Consent agreement.
Okay, so.
So, Madam Chair, next up, I'd like to inquire of staff about possible prior violations.
Ryan had one letter of concern in 2022, and that was regarding the ensuring that the premises is compliant and stays in compliance.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move to have the following order for the consent agreement. Respondent's veterinary license number 3766 and the premise license be suspended for 30 days and placed on probation for 1 year consecutively. Remove all clinic owned and or respondent owned and or feral animals from the presence from the premise within 30 days. Submit a practice monitor candidate or candidates, those are Arizona licensed veterinarians, for board approval within 30 days. And executive Director Victoria Whitmore may approve on behalf of the board. Supply the practice monitor selected and hired with a copy of the consent agreement. Hire that practice monitor within 30 days after the board and or executive director approval to remedy all violations, train respondent and staff, conduct random inspections of medical records and protocols, and submit reports of observations and progress to the board every other month until the board stipulates monitoring or is no longer required or to the end of probation. Mr. Harris. Can we do it till no longer required or till the end of probation?
Either.
Okay, so I'm going to do it till the board stipulates it's no longer required. Yeah, I'm going to stick with that. Pay a $1,000 civil penalty for each violation of ARS 322274A4. Those are the four controlled substance violations. That's $4,000, and a $1,000 civil penalty for the other 18 violations, for a total of $5,000 to be paid before the probation period ends. If not signed within 15 days of receipt, move this case to a formal hearing.
Second.
All right, so we have a motion and a second, and I'm assuming we're going to want to have some discussion on that. And any questions or concerns or commentary?
Yeah, did I hear the first was suspension for 30 days?
Yes.
Thank you.
So, summarizing, suspension, a year probation, practice monitor, regular practice monitor, inspections, training of staff, all of that to be completed within the year.
Report to us every other month.
And report to us every other month.
And that continues till we stipulate it's no longer required.
It's not limited.
Any other discussion? Okay. Let's go ahead and do a roll call.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Nay.
Mr. Lohe is an aye. Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
That motion passes 5-1. Madam Chair, I move to direct staff to forward all relevant findings to the Drug Enforcement Agency, New Mexico Board of Veterinary Medicine, and the New Mexico Board of Pharmacy.
Second.
And et cetera, if required, if applicable.
Second.
Okay,
that was a motion.
We have a motion and a second. Do you want to do a roll call on this one as well?
We don't need to for this one.
Huh?
We don't need to for this one.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Is that?
That concludes us.
Okay, so did we do, this is a consent agreement, if not signed in 30 days. 15 days, we got all that in there?
Yes.
Just want to make sure that was covered. Okay. All right, so that completes the review of case 23-148. Thank you. All right, so now, Tracy, we didn't have anyone else arrive. Good, still going back to the top?
That's correct.
Okay. So we will go to case 2379. And Tracy, will you read us the front load?
Yes, and Dr. Thompson is recused from this case. Case 2379, the complainant is Santana Garcia. The respondent is Deborah Chapman, DVM. On January 10th, 2023, Jade, an 8-month-old female domestic medium-haired cat, was presented to respondent for a neuter procedure. The cat was neutered and discharged later that day. On January 22nd, 2023, the complainant reported that the cat's tail fell off. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Great. So we do not have a complainant or respondent. We have Mr. Stoll here monitoring or speaking?
Monitoring, I'll think. Thank you.
Okay, monitoring. And Dr. Nosley, you're the lead on this.
Okay, thanks. In this case, I didn't see any issues with the medical record, the procedure, the discharge of the patient. We'd have to have a lot more information about this tail falling off. That's all we know. It was 12 days later. We'd need to know what exactly the complainant noted on the day of surgery, the progression. Was there any veterinary care? So we don't have any of that information. So I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Okay.
Second.
All right, so we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2379. All those in favor?
Aye.
So the next one is 2383. And Tracy, will you read us the front load?
Case 2383, the complainant is Zan Allred. The respondent is Don Argeletta, PVM. On January 30th, 2023, Joker, a 7-month-old male domestic short-haired cat, was presented to respondent for a neuter procedure. The procedure was performed and the cat was discharged later that afternoon. Complainant stated that when she got to her car, she noted that the cat was soaked with urine. After arriving home, the cat was agitated and appeared painful for hours. Additional pain medication was required to be administered. Complainant was advised that the pain medication that was administered prior to discharge would last for 3 days. Complainant called respondent premises to get clarification on her concerns. Respondent returned her call twice and left voicemails, but complainant did not return her call. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded to dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
All right, so we do not have a complainant or a respondent, and Mr. Soule monitoring. Okay. All right, and then Dr. Thompson, you're the lead on this one.
Yeah, so with this case, the owner was upset given the pain that the cat appeared to be in, and then also that it was covered in urine when she picked it up. Going through the records and the way that the team checks the animals that are in their care at the time of pickup, it appeared the cat was clean. As those of us who work in the veterinary field knows that that can change in an instant. Cats do soil in their carrier, so that's a difficult piece to prove one way or another. Their records show that it was clean on pickup. The pain medications, it looks as though the appropriate dose was given. I do have questions. Dr. Nosley, are you familiar with the meloxicam lasting for 3 days? Because that is not something that I know that you're not supposed to give it for longer than 3 days.
Correct.
But I haven't heard before that one injection is good. Buprenorphine, SR.
That's what I was wondering if it was that instead of meloxicam. Meloxicam in the cat still isn't even labeled, and so we use it all the time.
Right.
No problem with that.
So I don't necessarily find a violation here. I would agree with the investigative committee and dismiss the case.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second in the case of 2383 to dismiss. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.